Welcome to part two of our conversation with James Anito. Tell me about one of the cases that you had been involved in, and I know that they're involving something that's demonic, as you said earlier. They're few and far between. They're out there, but they are not the most common of cases. But the ones that you have been involved in, tell me about one of the more troubling to you that you went into and you found it to be, this is difficult. This is emotionally draining on those involved and yourself getting involved with the case. How did that go?
Well, so even though I believed in God and all this stuff what happened, even studying demonology, I still was on the fence about demons. You know, I do believe a lot of the things that trouble or afflict us are of mental disorders. And I really sadly do believe that, even though bipolar and schizophrenia and these things are really low percentages of the human population. I believe bipolar is only 1% of the population that people are affected by it. So, you know, even though those are rare as well, I do believe that a lot of the mental illness is the more concurrent things that happen within what's going on when they claim a demon. But, so my very first case, and I want to give a statistic to people, and I think this is important because people always try to ask me, what is the mathematical equation of demons compared to your actual negative cases? And I'm like, that's very hard. But my personal statistic is I've done close to 450, maybe 500 cases, 400 cases, something within that ballpark. And with out of all those out of my case file, I would only say five of those cases were demonic. And there's two more that are questionable that I always still debate to myself because there was a lot of qualifications that would lead to it. And, the person was affected. But I've also come to understand there's other things that can affect people as well. So, you know, if you look at five cases that I, quote unquote, would say that I could put the big D on is that's a large gap. 400 something cases compared to five cases. Mm-hmm. So that just shows you the rarity. So, and shows you with me not ever having to deal with one before, not really truly believing in it. My first demonic case dealt with somebody being possessed and me being brought on by somebody well more qualified than myself in a medical aspect. They went to, I'm not going to say any names or say what their portion of their of what their title is, but sure. They went to medical school. You know, they had a good head on their shoulders, but they brought me in, and because there was these things that were occurring that were out of this world, and even their opinion, and I was brought on, and what I dealt with would be my first. My first ever introduction into transient possession. And for people that don't know who transient possession is when a demonic entity can come and go from a person based upon how that person's free will is doing. Like a possession can only occur when somebody's will has been broken. So transient possession is the entity comes and goes because the person can regain consciousness if they're fighting enough and strong enough to try to repel back this affliction. So this person was going through transit possession. They weren't fully perfectly possessed, which is even much lower and rarer than possessions or even infestations are. And this person didn't, of course, show any of the attributes or qualifications of possession at first. You know, I was there to basically assess the situation. This is what's going on. Check out the location. And you know, I might, you know, of course, I've heard some of the stories, and so I was prepared that I might have to say a prayer over this person. And of course, I knew I was going to do a blessing over the property, but I did not know where the situation was going to go. And throughout the whole time, we were trying to get the person out, you know, out of their house, you know, and it's hard to try to keep people out of their house because it's their location, it's their house, you know, they feel comfortable there. But sometimes, you know, you really need a clean space. You know, especially depending on the size of the place, there's not a lot of room. You know, you need sure. the room. So when we started asking the person that was under this affliction to move, the personality started changing. Things about them started changing. And basically, I felt the need after the blessing of the house to say a prayer over this person. And I was preparing everything, and then everything just went to hell. You know, two big guys try to hold this person down, and even though they did, there was struggle. And this person's face deformed. The eyes went black. Speaking fluent Latin. And you know, of course, like I said, two big guys were holding this individual down, which was much smaller, much younger. And you know, they were having troubles, so it exhibited possibilities of superhuman strength in some capacity, or strength beyond his means. So there was a lot of things that were occurring, and you know, in that whole time too, I felt like I said, those times that I dealt with the demon, I felt that, you know, since stepping onto that property, I felt ill. The chemical reactions in my brain of the fight or flight kicked in. Like, I was like, I don't want to be here. I shouldn't be here. But, you know, that was part of me saying, dude, you have to be here, because, you know, you can't just abandon these people. You know, you committed. You said you would come. I'm here. Can't cower. So all things were happening within this time frame. So with that, and of course that, it really... really scarred a lot of people, threw a lot of the people that were involved in a turmoilous relationship. We were all friends. It really did break us apart for a long time. Many of us did not talk. But the one thing, though, it did not affect me in a negative light. It was scary. It opened my eyes, but it actually made my faith stronger. That was one of the one times that really notched the belt, saying that I dealt with something that I did not, you know, I believe that could be characterized as a demonic entity, through all what was occurring and it was exhibited. And it really made my faith stronger, even though it was a harrowing experience. And the many other times that I dealt with it in a small number, it was very, very sickening and very scary. And it really does make an impact on your life. You know, after a lot of those cases, I actually even had to go see a therapist, because I had to get off what I saw, off my mind, because you're not meant to see these things. These are things that are preternatural. And these are things that for a lot of people blow the concept of reality out of their head. Mm-hmm. You know, it puts them in a nutshell. And so experiencing this really affected me for a long time, but there was positive results from it, in my opinion, for me, you sure. know, in my faith.
And let me ask you this, and this is an interesting question that we run up against quite often. In your case here, where you had said that you went and saw a therapist to talk about this, and when you also work with therapists and psychologists on cases that you actively work on today, how do they view your work and the stories that you tell them and the accounts that some of your clients share with them? How do the two coexist without being simply dismissed? I'm sure it's probably a case by case basis and a therapist or psychologist by psychologist basis as far as their acceptance of the preternatural being a reality. But what have you found when dealing with things of these two different worlds, you know, colliding?
Well, like I said, in some way, psychology and business of spiritual warfare have or parapsychology or theology have been intertwined for a long time. Like I said, Hippocrates, the father of medicine, performed exorcisms and psychotherapy on people. He believed that that this worked. This would pull people out of the nutshell. And you know, a lot of psychiatrists and psychologists and therapists that are part of the mental health field don't believe in it, and believe that all demons are, of course, of inner demon belief system where we characterize these things, we create these things, and you know, of course, parapsychology, they think that with PK, like psychokinetic energy, you know, the thought form is possible, and we create these evil things, and we create these negative things based on adolescences or traumatic experiences in our life, and we create this thought form. Or what some people would call a poltergeist.
Mm-hmm.
So in some fashion, I lost where I was going. What was the question again? Sorry, I ramble
sure.
on sometimes.
No, that's fine. We're talking about how the two worlds can exist, that we're talking about
the
paranormal and the mental health field.
So time lapse. Sorry, I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning. but basically, there are people in the mental health field that are open. Mm-hmm. They actually are religious in faith, but I also think that they do a good job of separating from themselves being biased. They understand, for people that do claim that they are possessed, especially now being a member of the Catholic Church as a clergy, as a deacon, and working with people, there's a lot of liability that they look at. They do a lot of assessments.
Mm-hmm.
So the processes that I can tell you right now, we use a lot of psychologists and therapists, and we use their credentials to check these people, because I'm not a PhD in psychology.
Sure.
There are a few exorcists like Father Chad Ripperger, who is a PhD in psychology. Father Gabriel Morth, I believe, had a PhD in psychology. And he was the chief exorcist for a long time of the Roman Catholic Church. And, we use these people because it is due diligence, like I said, because I do believe mental illness occurs more than demonic possession or oppression or even infestation. So we deal with people that have experienced it, can give an unbiased assessment, because we got to remember, even though it is the medical field, there is bias.
Sure.
And you have to be able to find somebody that can give you the truth and not feed into the spiritual ailment affliction aspect of it, and really say, no, this person has bipolar 1 or 2, this person's schizophrenic, this person has dissociative identity disorder, they have this, that. And that is why I require these people that claim these things to go through assessments.
Mm-hmm.
And if a psychologist is doing their job correctly when it comes to assessment, they should be having their associates or their fellow doctors, or a person that maybe not a doctor that is a master's degree that still can talk to people, assess this person in multiple different ways, have different points of views and opinions. And if they assess this person doesn't come up with anything, of course we all have a disorder. You read the DSM-5,
sure,
you already think you're mentally crazy right there and then. So in some fashion, we all have a disorder, but if there's no disorder that eliminates the possibilities of this person truly being possessed, what in modern science or modern medicine can disprove otherwise? And, we even go through doctors, physicians, because if they've been exposed to black mold, exposed to asbestos, or they're taking medications that cause them to hallucinate, things that we ask in the process, if you're on medication, do you take drugs of any kind, even illegal drugs? So these are things we ask, because all these things can do different things to your brain function, the way your brain works, your brain waves. So, we include this process part of it, but you really have to approach the right person, because I've dealt with people that have therapists, and I've called them, because if they are seeing somebody, it's a requirement. They have to say that they're dealing with this ailment, because if they're not open, they're hiding the story, and that's not a good way to heal.
Sure.
But I've dealt with people that the therapist says, like, that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard pill to swallow, because, they're not being willing to be open. But I've also had times where I call a therapist and said, yeah, this person has this, and that, and they're on this, that, and that. And, it's a good tool to have, because I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a therapist. I've taken behavioral courses, in my business classes, and you know, I've been in management for a long time, so I can see when people have good days and bad days, and then to some reality. But I'm not a doctor, you know. So, but it's like I said, you have to approach the right person. Some people aren't open about it, and some people hate it and are fully against it. And then there are people that have experienced people that are under these afflictions and couldn't have put any modern terminology to it. And and that's hard to explain. You know, when you go through all these processes and you check all these boxes off, and nothing of the natural can prove what is going on, then that is when you move to the preternatural option.
Yeah. It's one of those things. We have we have two shows in our other program. I get letters all the time from doctors, from psychologists, from therapists that say they really enjoy the program because they've run into brick walls, not commonly, but from time to time, where they have to throw their hands up in the air and go, I don't think this is a mental disorder that this individual is dealing with, but there's nothing I can really tell them beyond what, you know, what some of these symptoms may kind of be like, but at the end of the day, they truly feel there is something else going on here. Let me ask you one more question in closing, because many people out there, I talk we do roughly 200 interviews a year now on this program.
Oh, nice.
Many people out there, they criticize the sheer number of people, the volume of people using the term demonologist these days. Do you feel that it's an overused term, or is the path to being a demonologist clearer today now than some make it out to be?
Well, that's a tough question. You know, I think there are misconceptions, like the beginning of our discussion and our interview, you know, misconceptions about what a demonologist is. You know, demonology really became more so famous around the times of King James and him coining the word demonology.
Sure.
You know, there was other books, of course, that in like 1516, like the Malefice and stuff like that, that touched upon witchcraft and stuff. But, you know, even though demonology is a branch of angelology, which is also a branch of theology, which also has hamartiology, which is, of course, the study of sin and many different branch lines, but demonology wasn't really a forefront of theology. It was more conceptualized by King James.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the study aspect of it, because there's many books on demons and evil deities from all different civilizations, and of course there's the witchcraft books, the, you know, the Malefice, and you know, all these occult books that you can read on to the Goetia, of course, for symbols and stuff like that. So there's the study of it, where maybe you can say I am a demon, because there is no schooling for it. In some form of fashion, in reality, there is schooling, but I'll go over that in a second for it.
Mm-hmm.
For most, it's a study, but a lot of people like will study it, slap that they are demonologist in it. But there's misconceptions to it, because there's the study, but then there's the applicable aspect, you know, the applied aspect of demonology, where these people that take the study and go in and try to assess a location because somebody brought them in, or the church requires somebody to go in to assess the situation. And for a long time, it was Ed Warren. You have people like Adam Bly, John Zaffis, myself, Keith Carl Johns, and people that are approached that have worked under people that come from these backgrounds and are somewhat kind of connected to each other. And we go into these locations to test these situations and then present it to an exorcist or a bishop or a priest and say that this is what's going on. This is what we compiled. This is what the team that brought us in compiled. You know, if they're claiming possession, they pass their assessments, their physician, you know, and we present these things. So that's the applied demonology, and that's where people get misconcepted. You know, if you read up a few books, that doesn't mean that you should start going to people's house and assessing their demonic situation. There are proper ways of getting involved within the pool of people that legitimately do it, that go through the processes, and then just start going in and doing exorcisms. I'm a demonologist. I'm a deacon. but I'm not an exorcist. I don't do exorcisms on people. I assess if really need be. I can do a prayer over a person, which is called a deliverance, in a state of oppression or an attachment. But in other circumstances, I check all these boxes off and I present to the proper people, because people don't realize when the Catholic Church does exorcisms over people, there's legalities to it. There's things that you have to have presentable. And so it's a hard book. So that's what applied demonology is, or what a demonologist is in some more form of fashion. Now, if you want to study it, that's cool. But you shouldn't pick up a book or two and then start going into people's houses and trying to assess the situation. And that's where it's dangerous. And like I said, for people that want to go to school for it, there's a thing called theology. You know, you can actually go to school for theology and get your degree. You know, I go to seminary, so eventually I will have my degree. I'm a theologian. I'm a deacon. So you can go to school for theology. And, of course, within those studies, demonology will be a part of that. And for me, to, I always tell people, if you really want to be accredited, you want people to respect you, then you do the right proper things. There's things out there. You know, it's like being a plumber and electrician. In New England, in most New England states, you need a license to be an electrician, a plumber. What I do as sheet metal, as a sheet metal worker, as a foreman, you need a license. You know, you can't just go in people's houses and start throwing ductwork or wires through if you're not licensed. Even though there's no licensing through the paranormal or demonology or theology in some concept, there is a theology degree out there that you can get. You know, of course, if you really feel a calling to work with people and you have a faith of any different portion, passion, whatever, you know, you can be Christian, Hindu, you know, there's those options. You know, Hindus performed exorcisms with the Ferba dagger, aka the Kila. You know, Jews, the Judaistic belief of exorcism, the Dybbuk. You know, Christians have the solemn rite of exorcism or the minor rite of exorcism. You know, other Christians use deliverances or some form of exorcism. So there's proper ways that you can go to the channels and work with the proper people. You know, if people that have these people in the house, you know, they should do their research as well. And I try to get that out to people. A lot of people don't know that, but they should do their research as well. You don't have to, like I said, you're not going to bring an unlicensed plumber in your house and do all your plumbing, or electrician. Your house is going to burn. You know, so you should do proper also research on these people, because, you know, you can do a background check. You know, I know a lot of people that have let people that are convicts in their house.
Sure.
And, you know, I've had to go in afterwards. So there's presentable, or maybe even sometimes I present, if depending on who they are, I present, this is my background. This is, you know, I have no felonies. You know, I didn't try to kill somebody. So, you know, there's the proper protocols. You know, if people are interested in it, there's people like myself that have the backing, and, you know, you just go through those channels. And if you feel worried about the person you're approaching and talking to about the demonology aspect, and they call themselves the demonologist, you know, I think sometimes you get a feeling when you hear a crack of bolt. So, you know, at least for me, you know, it's hard. You know, if you're interested in the demonology, there's the study and there's the applied aspect of it. And I try to tell people to stay away from the applied aspect of it, because it's not all fun and games. It's not like going to Six Flags and riding a roller coaster. You know, there's people's lives involved, and that's dangerous.
That wraps up the second part of our conversation with demonologist James Anito. A big thank you to him for joining us on today's program. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for the support and keeping The Grave Talks on the air.
Thank you.